Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 221st edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. Also locally for the Red Bulls on FansFavorite.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss amongst yourselves if you like. Pardon me if you have a question for me. Try to answer to the best of my ability as possible. And first things first, happy holidays, everyone. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. It's about to end tomorrow at sundown, as well as happy Kwanzaa to those that celebrate Kwanzaa. And, you know, 2014 was a very interesting year in Major League Soccer, as well as the U.S. men's national team. I think down the stretch you saw the grace, the character, the flow, as well as the pomp and circumstance when you saw one of the best produced American talents, that is Landon Donovan, and of course one of the great players in the world, when you talk about a legend playing for his country, for France, an Arsenal legend, a Barcelona legend, I think you can definitely say a New York Red Bull legend, but a complete legend of the game, as Thierry Henry, Landon Donovan, they both say goodbye to the game as a whole. And I'll be honest right now, it's going to be a while before we see another great player like Landon Donovan, even probably like Thierry Henry, to go out there and perform. Obviously, we have a Lionel Messi at Barcelona. There's a Cristiano Ronaldo at Real Madrid. There's also a Zlatan Ibrahimovic over at Paris Saint-Germain. We have Clint Dempsey as probably the next captain of this national team. We have a Graham Zuzi, but the real questions are, where is the talent coming from to replace Donovan? Not his ability, Landon Donovan, but Landon Donovan as a player that you can rely on, a player you can rely on when you know you need a goal, either scoring for your club side or for the U.S. national team. You know, it's just absolutely unbelievable when you are looking at how these players are going to be produced, where they'll be produced. And you know what? I have to say this. While it's nice to see Breck Shea coming back to Major League Soccer, playing for Orlando City, even though they are owned by Stoke, maybe partially, this is the worryness that I have with young players that has the ability to play for the national team, that has the ability to go out and become world beaters, yet they go to these top, tough leagues in Europe. And believe me, you have to, you definitely have to measure yourself to become one of those top-notch players in the national team. Forget about the players that are, of course, sons of mothers and or fathers in the service over in Germany, because they are already used to how to play in Europe. And the thing is this. What are you going to do when you transfer over from the United States, from Major League Soccer, to go and play in the top leagues in Europe, because it's two things. But it all comes down to one simple description, and that is the mentality of how to play there. You have to learn. You are not going to get your minutes right away. You need to earn your minutes there, because a guy like Breck Shea, who has tons of talent, tons of ability, tons of drive, is he driving to become a successful player, or is he just happy to be there? We all know the situation when you see these kids trying to make it in Europe. Look at Freddie Adu. He's about to be released from his club side. Actually, he's already going to be released in his club side over, I believe it was in either Croatia or Slovakia. I forget which one it was. But look at the failure he has become, Freddie Adu. And I don't want to say failure. I really don't. But the truth is he has. Because once again, the ego of some of these kids should not be this inflated when they make the transfer. Look what happened to Breck Shea. This kid was supposed to be the next great player for our national team. And yeah, he'll get his minutes back in MLS. But the truth is this. Why did he fail at Stoke? Why? Why did he fail at Stoke? It's very simple. Remember the pig head, the chopped off pig head joke that he was a part of? And then from that point on, he just could not seem to latch on for any minutes. They let him go. Basically, I mean, they send him back to MLS to be with Orlando. So hopefully he learned a lesson. These kids today that are playing in MLS, they think they're the best thing since sliced bread. And I understand if you're going to learn how to fail, I mean, just look up Breck Shea and Freddie Adu. This is a different mentality when you're playing on a club side in England that is a part of the Premier League. Altidore, sadly, is failing in England. He was successful at AZ Alkmaar in Eredivisie. I understand the money was too good, but to be honest, he should never have taken the money. He should have remained at AZ Alkmaar and paired up with Aaron Johansson to be a deadly tandem. I don't care how weak the Dutch league is right now in England. In Europe. I don't care. If you're doing well, if you're converting, if you are scoring goals, and you know what, you stay there. I don't think Altidore's confidence is shot, but obviously he made the left turn at Albuquerque, and it's going wrong. I don't even know if Sunderland was a good pick for him. But then again, what are you going to do when Pablo de Caño is waving you all those English pounds in front of your face to say, we're going to make you our top striker here, and unfortunately nothing is going right? If our national team is going to be much better with these players transferring over from MLS to Europe, a couple of things. Leave your ego stateside. Go to England. Learn from the best. Keep your mouth shut and keep your ears and eyes open. Third, don't even bother going to the Premier League, because they're not going to use you, okay? Because they already have several people ahead of you on their depth chart. That's all you are. You are basically League Cup material. Barely once in a while a substitute, FA Cup early rounds material. That's all you are. Nothing more, nothing less. In my opinion, you, if you're going to transfer over from MLS to Europe, it's better, and I'm not saying you should go to the Scandinavian countries. All I'm saying is, if you want to go to England, you can go to a Football League One side, a Football League Two side, a Championship side. At least the possibility is there that you can be a part of the starting 11 or at least the first substitute off the bench. Yeah, I know, you're not going to be seen. But you know what? What's better? Not being seen or being part of the U.S. men's national team? Because the quality of those leagues are still good below the top league of each country. That's all I'm saying. You need to think about not just your career, but if you are going to be picked for the national team, you need minutes. And to me, that's the only way players like you, Breck Shea, and like you, Freddie Adu, should go down there, check your ego back stateside, listen to these managers, don't be a problem for them, because it's not always roses when you play in the Premier League. Even the best English player has issues not making it big on a Premier League club. That's all I'm saying, because we need to show, even though it's been two solid World Cups that we've gotten out of the group stage, but we've been eliminated from the round of 16. The last time we got out past the round of 16, Korea, South Korea, and Japan, 2002. We need to get back to that position in the quarterfinals of a World Cup. And the only way it's going to happen, the only way it's going to happen, is if you keep your mouths shut, keep your eyes and ears open, and say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, I hear you, sir, thank you, sir, yes, sir, and then maybe Jurgen Klinsmann will contact you. We need you for the national team. That's what I want to see in 2015. That's what I want to see in 2015 when MLS is ready to go and when we are all ready to see the next generation of American players becoming a part of the national team, fighting for a Gold Cup, qualifying for a World Cup, and advancing out of the group stage and through the second round. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the last show of 2014 before I take a two-week break. And we got some great guests. We got a couple of taped interviews. We have Mr. Chris Williams from Who Are You Designs in the football financial department. Once in a while, I like to dabble into what ticks at certain things that makes these businesses that involves themselves in soccer successful. Of course, we'll have on Neil Morris to talk about the NASL, some recent news that just hit us. It's going to be interesting. Of course, pardon me, I got to do, and I will perform for you, my own mock draw, two of them, on the 2015 CONCACAF Gold Cup, because we still have a 12th position that still needs to be filled. But first things first, of course, my good friend Sean Reed, the man who wrote and produced the book, of course, published finally with the help of Robert Jonas from Centerline Soccer. Sean Reed finally got his book done. And, of course, I am in the book, page 227, or 277, I think it is. If you go ahead and order the book, he's creating a second edition right now of this book. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Mr. Sean Reed. You can follow him on Twitter, Love Thy Soccer. And here is Sean Reed right now.
And this is the Four You Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. As always, very happy to have the showman on who has finally published his book. It's taken probably forever, maybe 4 or 5 years. I'm not quite sure, but it's finally out there. Of course, it's Love Thy Soccer by Sean Reed. Sean, thank you again for being on the show, and welcome back.
Thanks, Daniel. Nobody gives me an introduction like you.
Absolutely.
Great to be back on.
Because you are a writing icon, sir, that's for sure. You've trekked this country from north to south, east to west. You've dabbled across the northern border to our friends up in Canada, and you finally were able to get this book out, Love Thy Soccer. Talk about that trek. I know it's been very long for you. Go ahead and tell the audience about this wonderful book that's finally out.
Well, it's a labor of love, and I'm sure that fans of yours who've heard prior interviews on the show know the background of the book. It's just been a saga, I think, in getting it produced and getting it all put together. The most difficult thing, and I address it in my introduction, is that the minute you write something down with the speed in which soccer is progressing in this country, it's outdated right away. So the book, by the time I actually had it in people's hands, which incidentally happened about 4 months too late, everything had changed. Yet the magic of the book, I think, and one of the things which will make it timeless, especially to the soccer fans like me who observed the last 5 years, is going to be able to look back on it years from now and see where we were. Because obviously in just the last 5 years, things changed. Next year, things will be altogether different, and they keep on expanding and keep on growing. The message behind the book is what I think is important. The details will change over time, especially depending on who is there and what individuals' different perceptions on where we were at would be. But I think that the message is that fans ultimately have a voice behind the direction we want soccer to go in this country, and the contributions made by fans along the way has been integral into getting us to the point that we are today. So now, that's the message right there.
Oh, absolutely. Now, talk about some of these ideas you put into the book. First things first.
Mm-hmm.
I love almost every single page has a supporter scarf of either the club or the supporters group, or of possibly maybe a college team, maybe even a high school team, a recreation team. You know, talk about putting every single scarf that you found into this book, even though maybe a couple of them have been maybe outdated or no, the club is no longer around.
Right. Well, I think it's important that soccer tells a story not only in print but in its imagery. And I just find such a fondness for the supporter scarves and club scarves in general. I like the idea that colors are just as important to the ethic of the club as the players on game day, the front office and its stewardship of the club, the community that's backing it. So scarves to me represent a very iconic piece of supporter culture. And I think that clubs have embraced that as they become a little more nuanced over time. We're starting to deviate a bit from the franchise tag, even though it's the franchise model with which we exist in today's soccer America. But the supporters' culture and these scarves that come from the club basically represent a point in time that you can't capture unless you were there. So I thought it would be appropriate in writing a book about where we are in this day and age and where we progressed over the last 5 years to incorporate that artistic element, if you will, to show kind of a visual timeline as well as the written narrative to go with it. So that's what it does for me, and I think the scarves are just great, and I continue to look for new ways to incorporate them into further printings of the book.
Now, you have different illustrations for each chapter. Obviously, part one, you've got basically dedicated to the Columbus Crew, everyone in Columbus, Ohio. You got Duncan Auten, the
yes.
former Columbus Crew player, standing on top of a rock with, I guess, I'm assuming it's pelicans on the rock with a soccer ball and the snakes that are some of the different teams from MLS. Nordec, thanks you, Duncan. We want 10 more. Columbus, Ohio, favorite kiwi. And
right. Right. So there, I'll stop you there. Those are kiwi birds. So those are kiwis. Otten's a kiwi.
Obviously.
And that was basically from a piece of TIFO, a banner that a guy named Justin Bell helped
mm-hmm.
put together with the Massive Movement in Columbus. They do some great work in the stands as well as some of these other artists like Oscar Mejia in Colorado with Centennial Firm 38. We also have Prairie Rose Clayton out in New England. I mean, her stuff is also very iconic and instantly recognizable. I basically wanted to tap these artists that put their artistic vision on display for the world to see when we're talking about a televised game and boil those down into what the overarching theme is for the five parts of the book. So we added, another artistic layer apart from the scarves, to basically show how deep the supporter culture goes.
Mm-hmm. Another chapter here, part three, actually, it's belief. It looks like a Revolution supporter or a USA supporter with a vuvuzela coming out of his mouth and blowing his horn.
Yeah, it's priceless. And Prairie Rose Clayton is one of my favorites, not only because she does some recognizable work. Hers is a very unique story as well, from the side of being a female supporter, from being a New England supporter, and all the trials that they've seen, you know, with regard to their team and marching out to Foxborough on a weekly basis. And she actually travels a lot with the national team. She caught that picture in South Africa for the World Cup in 2010, basically transformed that into a great-looking banner, which I actually bought for my own personal collection. Next time I'm at a national team game, hopefully I can, you know, break that out. But also it was very emblematic of the theme I wanted for that section of the book.
Absolutely. You know, just some great pictures here of detailing what this book is all about, and, of course, some other illustrations. You have this one, of course, Timber Joey, for part four, raising his chainsaw, everyone run and hide. A good argument, it's called. You know, it's really cool to see that you have gone from, like I said, from east to west, from north to south, how to capture what you want out of this book.
Yeah, absolutely. The book is meant to be not only intriguing visually, but like I said, tell a really good story and highlight a bunch of fan initiatives across the country. And I thought that by breaking them down into these five sections, from belief, a good argument, patience, perspective, and foundation, these are the five things that are really, I think, the building blocks for American fandom. And I don't mean to be preachy, as if I know all the answers, but in my travels and just in my basic beliefs as a fan, I think that you really need to have these five core things in your toolkit in order to thrive and prosper as an American fan. You need to believe in your club and in the direction we're going, or in the game itself and in America's power to persevere through it. You need to have patience, you know, because you're never going to be where you want to be right away. It's going to take work. Obviously, you need perspective and a foundation. You need to know where we're at versus where we've been and how we've come to it. And like you mentioned, the good argument section, we take a lot of abuse, I think, not as much today, but certainly in the past, as dyed-in-the-wool soccer fans. So we basically all of the things in this section, be it protecting American convention, naming convention, or standing up to the neoconservatives that typically like to make American soccer a populist scapegoat, we need to be able to rebut that as fans. And I think that this chapter, this section actually gives you a few examples of where and how we can do that.
Now, let me go a different way here. Obviously, number one, you picked John Strong till we find out where he'll be officially permanently. Either he goes back to Portland or he maybe goes full-time with Fox Sports. But the former NBC Sports Network play-by-play announcer John Strong, of course, from the Portland area, you asked him to write the forward. Why did you get John to do it? Why not maybe J.P. Delacamera, who's been around, or maybe, you know, his name's been around a little bit more longer? Why was it John? You know, why did you feel comfortable for him to write the forward?
That's a great question. John was very gracious. I want to believe he was flattered that somebody asked him, but he's a nationally recognized figure with a very, I think, good grip on where we are versus where we've been, which is kind of a central theme of the book. He grew up as a millennial, in a sense, that kind of fell into the sport along with a lot of the other people that I interviewed. So he's kind of more in the same generational group that, you know, I was in, that Robert Jonas, who advised me on the book, was in. He just seemed a little more accessible and someone that I maybe felt a little bit more of a personal connection to just from watching him on TV and being from the Northwest. Than J.P. Delacamera. And it's nothing against J.P. I've never met the man in person. I have a huge respect for his work and the amount of years he's put into doing it. But John Strong just seemed to me kind of the natural choice for the tone of the book, the kind of person that I am as just your run-of-the-mill fan writing this, and the fans that I've talked to along the way. I think that we all have a lot in common with each other, and he really brings a lot of that out in the foreword that he wrote.
Now, I have to ask you this next question, and maybe it's a little personal. I apologize to you if it is, but your wife, Lauren, has been very, very accepting of this passion of yours and, of course, allowing you to gallivant across this great land of ours to get every single story for this book. And I know you made a dedication to her, but seriously, for everyone that wants to know, how was she really receptive of your passion to write this book and to go across the country?
Everybody's got to have a hobby. And I think that a good marriage is one that supports your partner's individual pursuits. And in all fairness to her, I don't think that either of us knew what I was getting into when I started writing this over 5 years ago. So it kind of grew to be something larger than it was, but in order to get it finished, I needed to stick with it. And I think that the patience that she showed, and I think that to a degree the personal belief that she had in me to complete it, went a long way in seeing it through. And, you know, it's not always easy, but I don't think anything worth doing ever is. So, you know, like any good friend, I think she was very supportive, and, you know, I'm grateful for it because it's nice to finally see it done, and she deserves all the credit for helping me get there.
I have to say, and I do agree with you, every good man needs a strong woman to basically be there, to be our cheerleader, to be our support when we do these sort of projects or these sort of situations like myself. My wife has always been supportive of my show, and she always wants me to do well with it. Well, Sean, all I can say is to everyone who listens to this interview, I'm on page 277 of his book, and I have the only book that's autographed by Mr. Sean Reed and John Strong. So, ha! But seriously, though, I just want to say thank you very much for the time. I appreciate your hard work and your dedication to this book. I'm very, very happy to allowing you to give us these updates of this book. And now that it's finally been published, and I understand it's also sold out, so there'll be a second edition of this coming soon, I guess printing-wise. Congratulations once again. I'm very happy for you, and thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Daniel. And I'd just like to say that to everyone that contributed to the project, it's been a long process getting it kick-started. Especially those people that waited so patiently for the digital version to come out. I've been told that next week is the week that you should start seeing it on iTunes and Kindle. I'll make sure I get those copies out to those people that I've owed them to for the last 5 months. Again, my apologies. But if anyone's interested in getting a digital copy, they should be available next week. And the next printing, hopefully early on in the new year, should be good to go with even more good stuff. Updated maps. I'm going to edit it again, try to update it a little bit for 2015. So, again, something for everybody.
Love Thy Soccer, Sean Reed, out in paperback and very soon digital. Thank you again, Sean. Talk to you next time.
You bet, Daniel. Happy holidays.
And that is Sean Reed, and it is a great book. All the fun things that you want from a true soccer fan in the United States, going all over this country. I've met Sean Reed back in 2010 in Hoboken. He bought me a pizza. A couple of slices. It was on him. But still, a lot of fun. Up next, more football financial stuff. Who Are Ya Designs? Of course, you remember those commercials from the original Fox Soccer Channel. Who Are Ya? Who Are Ya? Well, Mr. Chris Williams, very fortunate to get a couple of minutes with him. And here is that recorded interview as well, if I can get it. Hang on one second here as we're going to try again. And hopefully it will work this time around. So So hang on 1 minute as we're having a little bit of an issue here. One second as we try to get that interview going. It is in the audio bin. We're just having an issue playing it. And here we go.
And this is, once again, the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, the end of 2014 show. As always, I like to talk a little bit about the business of soccer, the business of football, and what interests all of you. And one of those things, of course, is great T-shirt designs. Joining me now, the creator of Who Are Ya Designs, is Mr. Chris Williams. Chris, thank you for the time, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Daniel. Yeah, thanks for inviting us to talk to you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. I guess right off the bat, I was just out of curiosity. When did you get into the sport of soccer? Why did you fall in love with it? And how long have you been a fan of a certain club?
Well, let's see here. I grew up playing, so I started playing in Florida when I was 5 years old. And that's pretty much where I grew up. I played up through college. In my earlier years also, because it was back in the 80s, I was a fan of the original Tampa Bay Rowdies, so in the old NASL. So on a couple occasions, I got to be the locker room boy and pick up towels and, you know, jock straps off the locker room floor. So, you know, in the Rodney Marsh days, so I did that. And I don't know, I just continued. Even after college, when I stopped playing, I just continued to follow the game. So I don't know if I want to divulge what club I follow because, you know, there are some haters out there, but I can say in the company we have Chelsea supporters, Liverpool supporters, actually a couple Hibs supporters, an Arsenal supporter, and a new West Ham supporter. So we're kind of spread out.
That's good. That's pretty cool. And I have to ask, are you a new fan of the current Tampa Bay Rowdies of the new NESL?
Well, being from Orlando, I'm kind of excited to see Orlando City, mm-hmm. You know, get going and everything. I follow them somewhat. I haven't been in Orlando for a long time. I've been back and forth across the country, some time in Seattle, some time in Idaho. So I can't say that I follow them very closely, but I'm excited to see what they do in the MLS.
Same here. Orlando is kind of like my second home. I have plenty of friends in Orlando, as I like to go visit them, and we'll see what happens with what Orlando City will do in MLS 2015.
Yeah, I got my fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when did you come up with this idea of making these special shirts for soccer clubs in the U.S., soccer clubs obviously in Europe, as well as the national teams all around the world?
Well, I mean, it kind of grew from, you know, like I said, after I stopped playing, I continued to follow. And so, actually, my ex-wife and I, she's the one that I started the business with, we had made a few trips over to England and gone to some matches over there. And, you know, before you go into the matches over there, there's various vendors set up outside the stadium selling unofficial shirts, a little bit more irreverent, kind of fun stuff, you know, and then, you know, coming back to the States, and I had friends and acquaintances over here that, you know, had been ordering the similar shirts, you know, over from the UK. And so, you know, I have a graphic design background. I worked for various newspapers, magazines, cross country. My ex-wife had an advertising background. So, you know, I guess I was tired of the newspapers business, and we saw these guys selling these shirts, and we were like, well, people over here in the United States are buying them, and you know, with the exchange rate and shipping and everything like that, like we could do the same thing over here, you know, and I think we could do it better. So it kind of stemmed from that. We just kind of took a gamble and got really lucky, you know. I mean, kind of lightning in a bottle. So
absolutely. Before, I remember as we were talking off the air, I told you about those commercials I used to see of Who Are Ya Designs on Fox Soccer Channel, but I was curious to know, did it, as you said, it happened quickly, but was it also a struggle at first before it hit, or just right away, it just, boom, here we go, here come some orders?
Well, you know, honestly, I do feel like we got very lucky. I don't know if it's luck, you make your own luck, but like I said, I had an advertising background, and my ex-wife had an advertising background, and we knew from the start that,
you know, the whole if you build it, they will come thing doesn't exist. You can make the best shirts in the world, but if you can't get the word out, nobody will ever know about them. So we had had initial, we set up, I think we designed 30 shirts to start up, but we had already been in talks with a podcast, World Soccer Daily, even prior to launching the site, about, you know, advertising with them. And so the hosts got really excited and actually let the cat out of the bag about the site prior to us even launching and being ready. So we were faced with the decision of, well, actually we decided we better hurry up and just get them up for sale and everything. So we rushed and we made all the products active and everything. And, it, you know, we started getting orders right away from the fan base of that podcast. And so that's why I say, I mean, you know, like I said, the advertising was definitely part of our original plan. It just happened a little sooner than we thought it was going to.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty cool. Now, but I remember, as we've said already, your first commercial on television was when Fox had the Fox Soccer Channel, or Fox
right.
Sports World when it came out originally. What was the excitement from you and everyone else in the company to see your first ever television commercial pop up on Fox Soccer Channel? I mean, you had to be over the moon.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty trippy to, you know, be watching a, let's just say, Chelsea-Manchester United match and see your ad pop up at the bottom. So I have a lot of, you know, shots, my phone in the pub, you know, taking pictures of the television set when that would happen. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess on the flip side of it, I thought, wow, this is going to be expensive. But at the same time, I can't say, you know, Fox was a dream to work with. They were really helpful, you know, in helping running the company. And, you know, I mean, you would see us advertising next to Geico and Budweiser and big companies like that. But they managed to find a way that some of us small guys could, you know, get an advertising package and go right alongside, because I think that they realized the value in promoting a small company that was trying to promote the game here in the United States. So, yeah, once again, I mean, like I said, we feel very fortunate that they were willing to work with us, because obviously we don't have a Budweiser or a Geico advertising budget. So, yeah, it's a good relationship.
Now, I have to ask this. Has there been a time when maybe it's during the holidays or maybe after the successful commercials that popped up on Fox Soccer Channel, has there been any point in time where you were sold out of these great shirts and you just couldn't make them fast enough because they were selling out so quickly?
Well, we've always managed to keep up pretty well. So, but the holidays can definitely be hairy. So, we just, you know, I mean, it looks like Santa's Workshop in there during the holidays.
Wow.
People are pulling some long shifts. You know, sometimes I remember, you know, I'm not involved in the fulfillment aspect of it anymore, but back when, you know, I was doing it, we'd be there till 2, 3 in the morning, you know, the week before, the week of Christmas, you know. So, yeah, we've always managed to get up, though, so with a few exceptions, but we do our best.
Absolutely. And I'm on the website right now. I love some of these designs, actually. The one that I do like is the Boston Red Sox scripture that says Liverpool on the front.
Right.
In Boston Red Sox stuff. I also like the Man United Run DMC logo type
Thank
of thing.
You.
That's pretty cool. I like that, too. USA Soccer is also a nice one, obviously. Obviously, you have your partnerships with Kick TV on the front there. It's very nice. Actually,
okay.
I did a Jimmy Conrad special at the beginning of the 2013 season with Seeing
oh, right.
Red. So I was the one with the blue polo with the yellow large striped hoop going across. So that's me.
I didn't see that one, but I'll have to go back and look.
Yes, go ahead. Talking about the Red Bulls, of course, the people at the Free Beer Movement T-shirts, very nice
that's
as well.
Cool.
You know, just to see these great designs. Obviously, you probably have a lot that hasn't been used in a long time. It's probably you've had to redo a couple of things. Now, let me ask you about the Chelsea one, because I bet there's a hidden joke somewhere. because
Chelsea, right there on the homepage.
On the homepage says Chelsea T-shirt pensioner. What does that mean? Go ahead and explain that one, because that looks like a joke to me. Go ahead.
Well, it's not a joke, actually. That's their old crest. And, you know, Chelsea, their nickname is the Pensioners, because right there near the stadium is where the Veterans Hospital, or over there they call them Pensioners, where the Veterans Hospital is. And so a lot of the veterans would come and watch matches, and still do to this day. And they wear this really bright red, you know, military uniform like you see there in the crest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can still, if you watch matches every once in a while, they'll show a shot of some pensioners in their uniforms at the ground.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, that's really what that's about. And that's what we try to do, is like kind of give you the experience of, you know, something that we hope people actually learn from our site. You know, they go on, they read the descriptions, they're like, oh, that's interesting, I'll research it a little bit more. We try to do more than just, you know, just, well, obviously we can't do the official team badge or whatever on our shirts, but we just want to dig a little deeper, you know?
No, absolutely, and you got to do what you got to do, and I think it's a great idea to make something like that to honor military veterans like that that support Chelsea. I think that's a great idea. Thank you for informing me, because to be honest with you, I wasn't sure if that, because I'm so used to seeing, of course, the lion in the middle of the Chelsea badge. I always thought, this is something different. There might be a hidden joke somewhere. We don't know. But thank you for the history lesson. I think that's a very good idea, what Chelsea does for the veterans of the military in England. That's a great job right there.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you the dates that they use this badge, because I don't know right off the top of my head. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, also if you've been, you know, on the site or just seen our marketing or stuff we've done in the past, we really like to delve into the history of the clubs as well, and the history is a big thing for us. So, you know, anything like that that we run across, we try to see if we can do something with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Of course, you have some pretty good Arsenal shirts as well. I like this one with the cannon, Arsenologist. I know a friend that would love something like that, but I'm assuming he has it already if he hasn't been to your site. There's also Aston Villa. All of my heroes are villains. That's great. I love that. For Australia, the Roos, Socceroos with the kangaroo, with the soccer ball. But the best one right now is the usage of the NBA-style logo. And instead of a basketball player, it's a soccer player. That is cool.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I can't say that that is our most original design, because it seems like you see that NBA logo repurposed for all sorts of things. I actually saw an article by the designer of the NBA logo saying, does it bother you that so many people have used that and tweaked it for whatever their purpose is? And he goes, no, he's like, I'm actually flattered by it. So, yeah, we've actually had that design quite a while. It's been a real successful. Believe it or not, that one does really well on youth shirts.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a great thing to hear. I guess finally, are there any new ideas you're trying to make for Who Are You Designs to be more successful in the future? I mean, obviously, you've had a lot of success being a small company, an American company as well, and thank you for that. But are there any new ideas in the works that you want to push that maybe to make Who Are You Designs a lot bigger and a lot better than what it has been since the start?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess there's always new stuff coming on. I mean, we're always having brainstorms, and we have a, you know, I guess a goal list or a wish list about a mile long. But, you know, I think one of our things we really want to focus on is, you can see that Who Are You is pretty, I mean, the majority of our stuff is Premier League and England-based or whatever. And while we have done some MLS stuff, and we've actually had really good success with our U.S. national team stuff, I think we'd like to make more of an effort towards the U.S. clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bit different crowd. You know, I mean, I think we get a lot of business on the U.S. national team stuff from people who follow the English game, but maybe don't have an American club, so they call it an English club. But maybe we want to try to reach more Americans that don't necessarily have an English team, and so they just follow San Jose or Seattle, whoever. You know, and are also fans of the national team. So while it's, you know, it's almost like a new, you know, advertising genre or demographic, if you will. But we'd like to try to, you know, start working on more of that stuff and try to get the word out there.
Chris, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. Continued success in the business, and I really hope it gets a lot better and a lot more profitable. It already is, but I'm hoping for more for your future.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate your help getting the word out. And I hope you have a happy holiday.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you as well.
And that is Chris Williams from Who Are You Designs, as that shirt company for soccer keeps on growing and growing. I might share some ideas with the gentleman that created this wonderful business for such a long time, and hopefully it gets bigger and better. Time to talk some NESL news before the new year comes around. And joining me from the Indy Week newspaper in the Triangle of North Carolina, it's Cary, Raleigh, and Durham, North Carolina. It's my good buddy Neil Morris. Neil, happy holidays to you and your family, and how are you? Whoops.
I'm in
your Neil there?
Well, can you hear me?
I hear you. I got you. Good, good, good. We're all having some microphone issues, but that's okay. It must be a little early on the eggnog, but that's just me.
I wish.
Before we get into some of the news here, obviously we'll go to your Carolina Railhawks first. Akira Fitzgerald was picked up, signed by New York City FC, and he was a part of that stingy defense that the Railhawks had in both the spring and fall seasons for the Railhawks, and that must be a big void to fill now, depending on what Colin Clark's going to do in the offseason.
Well, I think a number of Carolina Hawks fans would quibble with your description of their defense as stingy. Although I will say the weakness did not lie at goalkeeper, because the Railhawks were blessed, as they have been for several years, to be quite honest about it, going back to the early days of Martin Rennie being here. They've been blessed with one or two good goalkeepers here. Last year was no different. Was the starting goalkeeper, and he was spelled in large spans both by injury and coach's decision by Scott Goodwin, North Carolina graduate, who came on and was the hero of the U.S. Open Cup run by the Railhawks. Akira's moved on to NYCFC, and you know, we all wish him the best. Akira is a wonderful example of what the lower divisions can be about for player development, at least in U.S. soccer. Akira was a standout at Wake Forest University. Started with the Railhawks in 2010, I believe, as a third-string practice keeper. I mean, he never even suited up for a game. Graduated the next year to being a backup to Ray Burse. Played a couple of friendlies and showed some flashes of technique. Was named a starter by Colin Clark a couple of times near the end of the 2012 season. He actually began here in 2011. Moved up to starter for 2013. That carried to 2014. Has moved up and down to Mount Lisa. So, you know, unlike a lot of teams that seem reluctant for their players to move on to MLS, Carolina relishes it. And, you know, we wish him nothing but the best. It does leave a hole for Carolina, because our starting goalkeeper is gone. And anyone who's listening who doesn't already know this, and it hasn't been reported widely, but I've heard it from multiple sources, Scott Goodwin has probably moved on as well. He's gotten married, and appears that he and his bride are going to back to Europe for a year. He played a year in Iceland after he graduated from UNC, came in last year, and it appears that he's moving either to Iceland or somewhere in Europe to play at least a year. And all indications are from everyone I've spoken to, a couple of goalkeepers, and we should hear an announcement within the next week or two, at least one that they have signed. I'm not at liberty to say who it is, but they've got a few player announcements coming up, I think, over the next week and a half.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to hear about those announcements when they do come out. Let's go straight to some of these interesting signings, some coaching signings, obviously. The first one that actually came out of the blue a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday or earlier today, Gary Smith, the former manager of the Colorado Rapids, signs a deal to become the new head coach of the Atlanta Silverbacks. Obviously, Eric Winalda not around anymore. I mean, apparently we'll get to that little bit of information later on. But is this a surprise signing for the Silverbacks to see Gary Smith at least going to the NASL, or it just, you know, it had to happen?
Well, no, it didn't have to happen. And I think there are a lot of people that were prized pleasantly or however by someone of at least his pedigree coming in. You know, former MLS with Colorado, and, you know, his always gets sort of bandied about as a possible candidate anytime any job comes open. You know, in Atlanta seems to be kind of, well, not kind of, Atlanta was going in the opposite direction as far as their standing in the league. You know, their investors have largely backed out. The team is going to be a league-owned team next year. And of course, with the Atlanta MLS team on the horizon, the days of the Silverbacks as a part of the NASL, everyone at least widely believe are numbered. I don't believe if you go to the league, they're looking for investors in other locations. But you know that appears to be an unlikely scenario, at least in my estimation. And so, with all of that against that entire backdrop, you have someone of the pedigree of Gary Smith being brought in. But it kind of fits with what the offseason's been like, doesn't it? You know, you've got Thomas Rogan coming in and with the Rowdies. Now Smith coming in with the Silverbacks. Who knows who the new owners of Fort Lauderdale plan to bring in to take the place of Gunter Kronsteiner. You know, it appears that there's some sort of concerted effort to at least attach the name managers to come in and take over these teams, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's good. It lends a little bit of prestige to the league. It's just this pairing of with Atlanta was a bit of a head scratcher, but you know, I think it's a good thing for the Silverbacks, obviously.
Obviously, and yeah, going back to Fort Lauderdale, I was surprised to see Ronaldo, obviously from Brazil, not Cristiano Ronaldo, but Ronaldo, who was running the board to prepare for the World Cup this past summer. Now he's joined the new ownership group of the Strikers. I mean, this is something that you never thought you'd ever see. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but Ronaldo actually joining the front office or the ownership group of the Strikers, and that should really start, I would maybe push ahead these ideas of Miami and MLS happening. Maybe it might throw it to the wayside.
I don't think it's going to affect Miami MLS unless Ronaldo is bringing a stadium with him. let's get it out of the way. Okay, Ronaldo coming in and attaching himself with the Strikers brand obviously made a splash. I mean, it was announced on Fox Sports 1, and it made a lot of headlines, and Ronaldo is a big name. Nothing wrong with that. Whether that translates to people in the seats, we'll see. You know, Miami FC, when Traffic owned them years ago, tried this sort of all Brazil, all the time movement, and it didn't move the needle as far as attendance concerned. You know, we'll see how many games Ronaldo actually attends. Let's try that first. You know, I know you never know how you never know what the politics and the economics of these moves are. You know, Grant Wall had tweeted out after his initial report on this that his sourcing said that Ronaldo has a 10% stake in the team. You know, and who knows how much that it actually involves as far as how much of the liabilities he's responsible for, if any. You know, his capital with the team may be his name alone, which may be enough to constitute a 10% share. So, you know, how much all in he is and how much he's just being paid for them to be able to use his name, how much he's actually going to be involved in the team, how many games he'll actually be. I think attend. I think all of that has to be worked out. I'm not trying to throw total cold water on this because it was nice to see the Strikers fans have something to cheer about since the championship, because it's been just this weird emotional roller coaster ride for those folks, because they were in the championship. And then seemingly days after that, well, then the day after that, actually, the new ownership group took charge. And the Shocker fans were blowing kisses at traffic and saying, you know, thanks, but, you know, see you later. And then literally within days, the worm had turned when it all came out that they were going to be letting a lot of the players go. And Gunter Kronsteiner probably wasn't coming back. And Soccer Tom was being let go. And then all of a sudden, it was, who are these folks that have taken over our team? And then the Ronaldo announcement comes, and the Stryker fans are all happy again. So I suspect there's probably a few more twists and turns in the road coming for Fort Lauderdale. So I guess from that standpoint, it was good as far as making a splash and making the fan happy. But whether he's actually going to make a tangible difference to attendance and player acquisition, it really remains to be seen.
Absolutely. And we'll see what happens once the regular season gets underway, the 2015 spring season, when we kick this off in April. Going back, obviously, to the coaching department with Thomas Rongen, going to the Tampa Bay Rowdies, of course, not many people were happy with how Ricky Hill was dismissed, but does it seem to be that, not to, you know, push away Ricky Hill, who's probably done a great job with the Rowdies, but is this a better pickup, or do you think it might be the same?
No, I suspect it's a better pickup. You know, I like Ricky Hill. He's a very gregarious guy. He had led the Rowdies to a championship, but, you know, without maybe being plugged into the locker room at all, it appeared that things had just sort of gone off the rails. They had a wealth of talent last year, and it seemed as if the problems from that they had always had as far as defense and other things like that got worse, and their offense, which had always been their most potent weapon, had receded as well. And, you know, did I like the way that he was sort of summarily dismissed at the end of a press release and a stray tweet? Absolutely not. I thought, public relations 101 demanded that he be treated a little better than that, and it's not really hard to come up with a better way to send off a manager that led you to a championship. That's just ridiculous. But that being said, everybody kind of expected it was going to happen. I mean, the word was out that Ricky Hill, if there was a coach that was going to get let go, it was probably going to be Ricky Hill, just because of the expectations that Tampa Bay had and the amount of money that they had spent on player acquisitions just for last year, not even talking about what they were already spending this offseason. So things were going to happen. So having a new voice is good. They've got a new GM with, you know, Farouk Qureshi, and he has a longstanding relationship, obviously, with Thomas Rongen. And now Rongen is bringing in a lot of his, you know, we've seen a flurry of player announcements the last couple of days with the Rowdies now signing Martinez, which give them even more pop-up time. Darnell King, former Strikers, who's a quality defender. And, you know, with the exodus for Fort Lauderdale, there's a whole lot of ex-Strikers out there on the market. And how many of them stay in NASL and how many of them go elsewhere, maybe MLS, maybe overseas, all that remains to be seen. There's some really good players that are out there now that Fort Lauderdale apparently isn't going to bring back. And one of them was Darnell King, who was one of their top defenders. And now, you know, Tampa Bay has snagged him along with Gale Ogbuosamonde, the star-crossed Gale Ogbuosamonde, who everyone in the American soccer landscape is familiar with, him and his nomadic career from, you know, being U.S. Soccer's Young Athlete of the Year to sort of this vagabond existence across Europe. We're very familiar with him. I'm very familiar with him from the year that he played in Carolina in 2012. I did a profile of him on IndyWeek.com that I sort of retweeted yesterday for Rowdies fans that are unfamiliar with him. Sort of a long-form profile I wrote about Gale when he first arrived at Carolina. So we're very familiar with him here.
Right.
Just a talented kid who's sometimes his mind and his heart may tend to wander, and that's always a problem. But his ability
Yeah, absolutely. Before I let you go, real quickly, Jacksonville sounds like they got off the ground really well. It sounds like everyone in Jacksonville is ready for the Armada coming into the fall season in 2015. I mean, the spring season, excuse me, 2015. But what is this with this new Los Angeles NASL team? Because obviously in 2017, MLS will have LAFC rolling with all those owners. Amazingly, it looks like a law firm, not a soccer ownership. But why does the NASL want to put a Los Angeles team basically to go against the Galaxy? And obviously 2 years later down the road, LAFC's coming in.
Well, I think the short answer to that question is it's Los Angeles. It's the, you know, there's two major mega markets in this country. It's New York and it's L.A. And I suppose that if you're a sports league of any type, that you won't have a hold in both markets. And the NASL has a New York team, and now they want a Los Angeles team. I was actually the first to report this last month that the news, and through multiple sources that I consulted with, all with connections to league officials, had confirmed to me that this was on the horizon. And in the weeks since my initial reporting, I've heard from several other sources who have both confirmed and furthered a bit of the detail about what's coming. Unless something miraculous changes in the next couple of weeks, the league is slated to announce this LA expansion franchise quite soon.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's going to be within the next week or two, but it could be. I know there's a January Board of Governors meeting with the league, and I don't know if something may sort of drift over until that, if they've got to make some finalized plans. But the fall season has not been published yet, and my indication is that there's a spot in that schedule for LA. They're hurrying this team onto the market because they have some deep-pocketed owners, Armenian owners, I'm told, who are ready to foot a team and want to get started as soon as possible before this LAFC situation sort of takes hold. They see their window as now. With Chivas out and LAFC not yet formulated, they want to get started now. Again, some of the other reporting, again, it's Armenian owners. I had initially sort of postulated in my initial report that they may play in East LA at Weingart Stadium. I've had at least one confirmation of that since then, that that's where they will play. Now, that's not official yet, but I've got at mm-hmm. least one additional confirmation on that. It's a 20,000-seat stadium with a FIFA-approved turf, so it's ready for soccer. But why they want to go there, it's L.A. And it's you know, if you were trying to move a second team into Dallas or Salt Lake City, I would say, what are you doing? L.A.'s big enough to handle it. I mean, you know, the best NESL teams, if you average 6,000-7,000 a game, you're doing pretty well. So, you know, it's all in how serious the owners are about spending money on marketing and front office and player and all the rest of it, and targeting the right markets and doing all the legwork. Now, all that remains to be seen. I'm a little concerned that they're rushing this team out so quickly and not doing the run-up that they should be. I mean, they don't even have a team
right.
name yet. I haven't even gotten confirmation of what the team name's going to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little concerned about that. But LA's big enough to handle an NESL team if they're marketed correctly.
Absolutely. Neil, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you and your family, and Happy New Year as well. I will see you in 2015. Thanks again for the stellar reporting, and I'll talk to you soon. Happy holidays again, sir.
Daniel, wishing you and your family happy holidays, and I look forward to talking with you many times in 2015.
Absolutely. Have a good night. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's Neil Morris of the Indy Week newspaper in Cary, Raleigh, and Durham, North Carolina, covering North Carolina soccer and, of course, Neil Morris at the movies. So That's a lot of fun. Now, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. I prepared for this for you. I wanted to give this a shot because, obviously, you know, CONCACAF has done some pretty good things in these wonderful Gold Cups, making them obviously competitive. The CONCACAF Champions League has been a great addition as well. It's made our confederation better club-wise, national team-wise, and especially with the Gold Cup and World Cup qualifying, it's going to be a lot of fun here. Now, here's what I did, and here's how it is. As everyone knows, in CONCACAF, there are 35 nations, three in the North Zone, seven in the Central American Zone, and the rest, which are in the Caribbean. So that would be about 25. And there are other nations or islands that are a part of CONCACAF, but they are not a part of FIFA, so they are not in the rankings of FIFA. And, of course, some of these islands are territories of France, of the Dutch, even the English as well, as you know. It's really interesting. Aruba is a territory of the Dutch in the Netherlands, but they are a FIFA nation, so they are able to go ahead with it. But the truth of the matter is you have these nations, especially like Gibraltar in Europe, that is allowed to be a part of UEFA for qualifying, but they are not a FIFA nation, so they do not get ranked in FIFA's world rankings. So once again, with you know, with the member associations, obviously those that are not a part of FIFA but can only perform in CONCACAF tournaments, clubs, and national team tournaments. One is, of course, Bonaire in the Caribbean. There is, of course, once again, Guadeloupe. That is not a FIFA. It's not a FIFA country or under FIFA at all. There are others like Sint Maarten, and it's spelled M-A-A-R-T-E-N, and not Saint, but Sint, S-I-N-T. I think also Saint Martin is not a FIFA country, or at least a country that's been seen under FIFA rules and stuff. But the rest of the country, like French Guiana, they are going to be in this playoff for the final spot of the 2015 CONCACAF Gold Cup. At the moment, like we said, there are 13 teams. French Guiana, which is the fifth-place finisher in the Caribbean Football Union's Caribbean Cup, will take on the fifth-place finisher of the Copa Centroamericana in Honduras. And Honduras is ranked, but French Guiana is not. So if you people are wondering how would this draw be done, it's very, very simple. Very, very simple. As everyone already knows, the USA, Costa Rica, and Mexico have already been seeded as the group stage schedule has come out. The United States as the host nation, ranked third, will take over Group A1. Costa Rica, who is ranked first in CONCACAF, they have been placed in Group B and have B1. Mexico is ranked second, and they are already in Group C, and that is in position C1. So we already know who the group stage first positions are, and once again, the United States is ranked third, and they're the host, and that's why they're in Group A. So how do we determine the three other pots, the pot two, the pot three, the pot four? Very, very simple. We go with, and at the moment, like I've said, we're going to have two mock draws here because we're going to have to see what would happen if French Guiana defeats Honduras in the playoff, which will be around the end of March during those FIFA calendar dates. If French Guiana does defeat Honduras, I'll tell you where they would be placed. But the second mock draw would be if Honduras defeats French Guiana and where they would be placed. So here are the FIFA CONCACAF rankings for December of this year, the final ranking 2014. You can look it up at FIFA.com at their rankings. You go to the men's rankings and you just click the CONCACAF. Number one, of course, is Costa Rica. Number two is Mexico. Number three is USA. Technically, it's pot one, but pot one has been eliminated because we all know where these teams have already been placed. So we go to the next three ranked, and then the next three ranked, the next three ranked for pot two, then the next three ranked for pot three, the next teams ranked in pot four, or those teams that are not FIFA members, only CONCACAF members. So here are the rankings right now from CONCACAF through FIFA, and that is number one, Costa Rica, number two, Mexico, number three, USA, number four, Trinidad and Tobago, number five is Panama, number six is Honduras, number seven is Guatemala, eight is Haiti, nine is Jamaica, 10th is El Salvador, 13th is Canada, and 14th is Cuba. And the only non-member, the only non-FIFA member, CONCACAF only, that will be in this draw, of course, once again, French Guiana. So there you have it. So here we go with the first mock draw for the 2015 CONCACAF Gold Cup. Now, once again, we are assuming French Guiana defeats Honduras in both legs of the playoff. So that would mean in pot two, ranked fourth, fifth, and sixth, Trinidad and Tobago, Panama, Guatemala. Next three ranked in pot three are Haiti, seventh, Jamaica, eighth, El Salvador, ninth. And then the next three ranked, or if not ranked, a CONCACAF member only, ranked 10th, Canada, 11th, Cuba, and of course not ranked in FIFA, only allowed to play in CONCACAF tournaments, French Guiana, and that will be in pot four. So here we go, and once again, as you know, there will be no clashes whatsoever. There's no clash in anything here, so we're going to go straight from A to B to C. Pot two for 2A, 2B, 2C. Pot three for 3A, 3B, 3C. And then pot four for 4A, 4B, 4C. So here we go. I have the pots and the balls ready to go, so we're going to go to pot two right now. And if you want to be a part of the fun, whether you're listening live or you'll catch this later in the archive, get your draw sheets ready. You know, get any piece of paper you want, write it up. Here we go. We're going to go to pot two right now to see who will be drawn in groups A, B, and C. So if you can hear the balls going. All right. First ball out as I go ahead and pick and see who I want to put. Well, not really what I want to pick and see, but who goes into group A with the United States. All right, it's opened. And the first paper comes off for group A. Second position is Panama. So Panama will be in group A with the United States. I have two balls remaining. As we go ahead and we start giving it another spin here, see what we're going to do here. All right, and I will grab the ball now, and I'm going to open it up and see where we're going to pick the next country in group B, position two, and it is Trinidad and Tobago. So Trinidad and Tobago will go with Costa Rica in group B. And now we're going to spin around. Of course, we don't really have to spin it around, but, you know, just to make sure that it's all fair and fun. And, of course, it's going to be a lot of fun here as we pick Guatemala. Guatemala has been picked for Group C with Mexico. So at the moment, here we are, Group C, Guatemala is with Mexico. And now we're going to go to pot three, as we already said here, for pot three. And in pot three, we have Haiti, Jamaica, and El Salvador. So here we go with pot three. And as we mix the balls up here, as we get ready and get set and have some fun, first ball is out, obviously. And the first team to be joined with the United States and Panama in group A, and it is Haiti. Haiti will be with Panama and the United States in Group A. Group B now, Costa Rica and Trinidad and Tobago looking for a partner in the third position in the pot. And as we have already picked up the next ball, as we try to open it going forward here in Group B, and as I get the paper out, Here we go. We have El Salvador. El Salvador will be placed in Group B in the third position with Trinidad and Tobago and Costa Rica. And now, obviously, we have one ball left. Spin it around as we make sure everything is going to be fair and balanced and everything else that happens here as I try to open it up. And as I comes open nicely. And we have Jamaica. Jamaica will be in Group C with both Mexico and Guatemala. So once again, here we go. Group A, United States, Panama, Haiti. Group B, Costa Rica, Trinidad and Tobago, and El Salvador. And Group C, we have Mexico, Guatemala, and Jamaica. And now we go to Pot 4. Pot 4 now is the team in play. We have ranked Canada, Cuba, and the non-ranked CONCACAF nation only is French Guiana. So here we go. We're gonna spin the pot here. We're going to make it – I hope you're enjoying this. I'm trying to make it as official as possible. Obviously, once again, it's a mock draw. This will not count. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen at the end of March to see who is going to win that playoff between French Guiana and Honduras. But once again, this is where French Guiana's mock draw comes into play. As we open up the first ball here with Group A, we have the United States, Panama, Haiti. Canada will be joining Group A. So we have our first filled group right now. Once again, we've got the United States, Panama, Haiti, and Canada in Group A, Canada finishing up the group. And now we spin the balls here and make sure that everything is all nice and fair. Everything is good here. We take out the second ball of Group B in the final position. And as we open up the ball and we pull out the paper, as we see, it's French Guiana. French Guiana will go to Group B, and they will be playing with Costa Rica, Trinidad and Tobago, and El Salvador. So that is Group B. And, of course, the final paper, obviously, as we spin the pot around to once again make sure that we all hear the balls. And don't you? This is how radio used to be. So this should be a lot of fun here with what I'm doing with you with this mock draw. And, of course, the final team picked will be Cuba. So Cuba will go to Group C with Mexico, Guatemala, Jamaica. So there it is. Once again, real quick, Group A in this mock draw involving French Guiana, Group A, United States, Panama, Haiti, Canada. Group B, Costa Rica, Trinidad and Tobago, El Salvador, French Guiana. Group C, Mexico, Guatemala, Jamaica, and Cuba. So that is your first mock draw for this Gold Cup. Now, we're going to take out French Guiana, as all the pots have been prepared already for the second mock draw. Now, once again, here is where the switch happens. As we already said, Honduras is ranked sixth in the 2014 month of December rankings of FIFA. So that means in Pot 2, you will have Trinidad and Tobago ranked fourth. You have Panama ranked fifth, and you'll have Honduras ranked sixth. So there you go. In Pot 3 now, ranked seventh is Guatemala, ranked eighth is Haiti, and ranked ninth is Jamaica, meaning that El Salvador will go into Pot 4, and they will be with Canada and Cuba. So here we go as we get set to go again for another mock draw. This is no French Guiana. This involves Honduras. So here we go. Once again, we don't have to worry about Pot 1 because Pot 1 has already been decided. The United States is in Group A. Pot B is obviously, I should say Group B is Costa Rica, and Group C is Mexico. So here we go. Here we go. Pot 2 for the second mock draw involving Honduras. Here we go as we get the balls all nice and moving around. It's going to be a lot of fun here again. And here we go for, are everyone ready? Here we go for Group A, Position 2. And as we go ahead and we pick and undo the ball, here we go. And we have Trinidad and Tobago going to Group A. Okay, Trinidad and Tobago taking the second spot for Group A. Here we go again. We're going to go to Group B, the second position. And as we take out the ball, as we get ready, here is the second mock draw. Here it is, Panama. Panama will be going to Group B with Costa Rica. And obviously that means as we spin this final ball around in the pot, final ball, and here we go as we take it out. There we go. It's going to take it out now. Going to undo it. And it is Honduras. Honduras will go to Group C. So there you have it. Group A, Trinidad and Tobago with the USA. Group B, Panama with Costa Rica. And Group C, Honduras goes with Mexico. So here we go with Group, excuse me, not Group, I keep messing that up. Pot 2, and that will have, excuse me, that'll have Guatemala, Haiti, and Jamaica. As we go ahead and spin the balls around, as we go and see who's going to be with the United States in the third position in A3. Here we go. And as we pick it up here, we are going to have, with the United States and Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica. So Jamaica will be in the third position in this second mock draw with their Caribbean brothers in Trinidad and Tobago against the United States. So that should be an interesting one. Here we go with another Group B pickup. And as we pull out the ball, and here we go, we're going to unscrew the ball. And right now we have Guatemala. Guatemala will be going into Group B with Costa Rica and Panama. So we have one more group to go, spinning the ball again, making sure everything is all nice and fair as we pull it out. And we're going to now unscrew it and see what's going to say on the paper. And it's Haiti. Haiti will go to Group C with Mexico and Honduras. And there you have it. So far in Group A, United States, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica. Group B, Costa Rica, Panama, and Guatemala. And Group C, we have Mexico, Honduras, and Haiti. So there you have it. And now the final group, Pot 4, the final pot, which will have El Salvador, Canada, and Cuba. So here we go. We're going to mix it up here. Going to mix this up and see who is going to get picked. And there we go. And as we get ready to already pick the ball, we're going to open it up and see who's going to come out for Group A. And it will be Cuba. Cuba will be in Group A with Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, and the United States. Here we go now. We got go to Group B and Pot 4. The balls are being moved around here. Looking here, as we're trying to be as fair as possible. Ball has been picked, and we'll unscrew it. And going into Group B with Costa Rica, Panama, and Guatemala is Canada. Canada will be placed in Group B to finish that off. And now, of course, there's only one ball remaining, obviously, in the pot for Pot 4 in this second mock draw. As we get set, everyone can hear that ball. I hope so as I pull it out. And, of course, as we open it up, it's very simple. As we open up the paper, it's El Salvador. El Salvador is Group C with Mexico, Honduras, Haiti, and El Salvador. So, once again, here we go for the second mock draw. We have from Group A, the United States, Trinidad and Tobago, Jamaica, and Cuba. For Group B, Costa Rica, Panama, Guatemala, and Canada. In Group C, Mexico, Honduras, Haiti, and El Salvador. End of March, first and second legs will be during, of course, the end of March. And that will also start the road to Russia in CONCACAF for the 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers. So that will be a lot of fun. That will be very interesting to see. And you know what? I enjoyed this. This was a lot of fun. And if CONCACAF, if you want to try and do this type of draw, like you've been doing for the CONCACAF Champions League, doing it for the Gold Cup, it's fine how you want to do it with the Champions League. But I think the Gold Cup also deserves a draw to be televised as well. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. I really think that you guys would really, really enjoy seeing a draw. Now, once again, this is internet radio or just radio, and I had to put my microphone close to the pots to make sure that you heard the balls going around and around and around so that you know that I'm trying to conduct this fairly. At the same time, it's a mock draw. It's not a real draw. This will not go on CONCACAF's website. Once again, Honduras and French Guiana need to have this playoff to say who is the 12th side, because at the moment we have 13. So it should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. I can't wait for the CONCACAF Gold Cup to happen. And I really hope you guys enjoyed that. I really hope you guys enjoyed that mock draw that I did. Obviously, it's a lot of fun when you do these sort of things, especially for the World Cup. But you know what? I try not to do a mock World Cup draw. You know, I mean, you can see what might happen, but, you know, you probably could get some big ties, obviously. But you know what? I mean, last year, December 2013, it was a lot of fun to see what happened down in Rio de Janeiro when they had the actual group draw, the final draw for the 2014 FIFA World Cup. And I always try to go back to YouTube to relive those moments when you were hoping that maybe there were certain teams you were hoping were coming into the USA's group, but we got Portugal. And you know what? Portugal has to work harder to try and get 3 points on the USA whenever it's a World Cup group stage match. So we'll see what happens there. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening to the show. I want to thank you for spending the time, whether it's live or archived, if you want to catch it later. I thank you so much for listening to this show. I just try my best to give you the best content possible on the game here in the United States as well as Canada and in North America. There's a lot of people to thank that has made this show special. And obviously there's too many names to say thank you to, but I do want to say thank you, important thank yous to people that actually helped me out during the World Cup once again. And obviously I want to just throw out their names. Gary Richards over in Los Angeles, Diana Germano as well in Los Angeles, in Queens, New York, Mario Cisfantos, who helped out, Coach James Galanis in the Philadelphia area, Eric Krakauer as well in New York, helping out on talking about Portugal. There was also Juan Arango down in South Florida, George DeMatteis helping out as well with these shows during the World Cup. I also want to thank some other people that were also helpful during the World Cup that was over in Europe as well. Of course, there's Jonathan Johnson from France, the Englishman that helps out. Of course, listen to French Football Weekly as well. And other people as well. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember the name, obviously. He writes for World Soccer Magazine. John, I forget his name. I apologize. I feel bad. I just forgot his name, unfortunately. But, you know, he covers the Belgium. He covers the Belgium League, the Juniper League in Belgium. I feel so bad that I forgot his name right now. But still, for those many people that have helped me out with this show from beginning to end in MLS, the NASL, the USL Pro League, PDL, NPSL, World Cup, USA Reviews, CONCACAF Champions League Reviews, of course, John Jagu in Mexico, covers Mexico, obviously. Thank you, John. As always, for helping me out. There's going to be a lot next year, obviously, with New York City FC and Orlando City coming into MLS. But once again, to everyone, too many names to say thank you, but you know who you are. You listen to the show. You're a part of the show. Thank you, as always. Enjoy your football. Hope to talk to everyone next year. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Everything that's involved with the holidays. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you so much again for listening. I always appreciate it. And again, for the final time in 2014, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, and we'll see you in 2015. Bye-bye for now, everybody.